Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 145 of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you again for joining us, whether you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Boxing Social, wherever you're at, however you're listening. We definitely appreciate it. Yeah, you could be in your car, could be at home, could be at the gym, wherever you're listening to us. Like I said, we're grateful to you guys coming off. Today, because we're recording this on Tuesday of this week, coming off a pretty riled up press conference in Beverly Hills, California, here in Southern California, between Canelo Alvarez and Caleb Plant, who fight for the undisputed super middleweight title in this upcoming November in Las Vegas. Obviously, we'll touch on that a little later on in the show. But this week, our special guest, he returns back to the Last Round Podcast. He's with CompuBox. He's a CompuBox operator. He's been with CompuBox since, I guess, you could say birth. It's his family business in a sense. And he's also the host of Inside Boxing Live. Dan Canobio, all the way from New York, joins us here on the Last Round. Thank you for joining us, Dan.
Hello. Hello, Danny Z, Mike, Last Round audience. Happy to be here. Happy to talk about actual boxing, whether it's slaps at press conferences, still beats talking about WBA corruption, beats talking about Oscar Valdez drug tests, beats talking about Evander Holyfield stepping in a ring. I'm excited because I think from here on out, you know, barring, you know, any COVID related stuff, the boxing schedule is super stacked from now until December. So I'm excited.
Absolutely. Yeah, we definitely got some different and new news as of today with everything that's going on. It's a breath of fresh air. But starting with fight previews, this upcoming Saturday, the 25th of September in London on Sky Sports Box Office in the UK and on DAZN, I believe everywhere else, including the United States. Anthony Joshua, 24-1, goes up against Alexander Usyk. And this is for the WBA, IBF, WBO, and IBO World Heavyweight titles. All right, Dan, you break down the stats for us, and what's your take on this fight? I think it's going to be a tricky one for Joshua.
It is. You can make a case that it's the toughest fight for each guy. It's definitely the toughest fight for Usyk. For Joshua, you can make that case too. I think Joshua has one of the best resumes at heavyweight currently. But if you want to pick apart, everyone can pick apart a resume. And if there's one knock on Joshua's resume is that maybe he doesn't fight a lot of these guys when they're at their absolute peak. You know, Klitschko was 42. Dillian Whyte was too young. Povetkin was too old. You know, Ruiz is fat. Everyone has an excuse for why Joshua doesn't have the best resume. But I think if either guy wins, you can make a case that, like, wow, like that is a legitimate win. But I'm leaning towards Joshua just because of the things I just listed, like the resume. And, you know, this is definitely his toughest test because Usyk is so damn technical and he's got the best footwork and he throws 40 jabs around, which is the most jabs thrown of any fighter in any weight class. 40 jabs around is just an astounding number. So he's going to have, and he's a southpaw too. And Joshua hasn't faced a southpaw since Charles Martin, and he put Charles Martin to sleep. But yeah, I'm leaning towards Joshua. It's interesting. I'm going to put out a video later in the week talking about the transformation of Anthony Joshua. You know, his first 16 fights before Klitschko, he was a seek and destroy fighter. He was a knockout artist. He was throwing power shots 63% of the time. You flip fast forward to today, the six fights after Klitschko, 63% of his thrown punches are jabs. He has completely changed his whole style. He is a cautious fighter now. He sits behind the jab. He's calculated. And I sort of think he did that because there's a lot of reasons. I think because maybe he doesn't trust his chin. He doesn't think he can fight for a full 3 minutes. And it's also a business guy. Like, how do you get these biggest fights? It's by longevity. And the only way to keep staying alive in the heavyweight division is to fight cautious and choose your spots. But with all that being said, I think that he's now mastered this new boxer puncher. And I think that just he has a little more wrinkles than Usyk.
So you touched on AJ's resume, Dan. Mm-hmm. I believe I asked last week's guest, we had a Southern California journalist here, David Avila. I believe I asked him last week on who he thought had the best resume in the heavyweight division. Would you say that's Anthony Joshua? Because I think he said it was Tyson. He chose Tyson Fury.
I mean, yeah, you can go with Fury because he beat Klitschko when Klitschko was more towards his prime. He beat Fury. And he beat Wilder. You can just say one Wilder win is better than everyone that Joshua's faced. But I think that Joshua's is just longer. It's just deeper. Fighting Chisora, he didn't fight Chisora, fighting Dillian White. Taking on Povetkin, beating Klitschko. Klitschko was like a little past his prime, but he was in like the best shape of his life. And that was like the most exciting version of Klitschko that I've ever seen. But I think you can make a case for both, but it's tough. It's like a pound for pound list. Like it's almost like kind of subjective. So I think that Joshua's resume is the deepest currently at heavyweight.
Mike, what do you think about this fight? And then about resumes, the best resume in the heavyweight division
for this fight, I think it's going to be a good test. I know people keep talking about that just Usyk is just too small, mm-hmm. but I think it's going to be hard for Joshua because Joshua's not very good at like hitting on the move. You can kind of like Dan touched on, he kind of seems a little bit vulnerable because even with that 12 round decision over Ruiz, I was still kind of sat there like biting my fingers, like, is he going to do it? Because there's always, when he gets up close, you kind of like, oh shit, I hope he doesn't hit him. He just seems to have that weak chin. Whereas, Usyk, when he fought Beliau kept talking about like how Usyk's always moving. It's kind of like he mentally drains you because you have to keep thinking about what he's doing tactically. And we've already seen that, AJ doesn't have a good gas tank. He always has to kind of wait for that second kind of wind later in the fight. I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be a good fight. I think, Usyk could take it on a 12-round decision, just boxing from the outside. I know, obviously, he's a smaller guy, but unless he's up close, does he really need to do that? Is he going to get in there and try and throw him around? I don't think so. I think he's going to try and box him from the outside and probably just try to do like a 12-round masterclass of just, sticking and moving. And then it's up to AJ to try and catch him. In terms of resume, I think Dan kind of nailed it. I think AJ has a good resume, but all of them in the prime. But then Tyson Fury doesn't have the names, but he has the two big wins. Klitschko probably in his prime and Wilder probably in his prime at that time. But everything kind of below that on Fury's record is, C-class, D-class kind of people. People he dragged up from cruiserweight, like Sefer Sufuri and those type of guys. Whereas AJ, has Povetkins, Pulev, probably towards the end of their career, but they're still on there.
It's funny. It's like everyone can like pick apart the top three at heavyweight, and Fury has never defended his title. He's never defended a title, so that's the one knock against Fury. The one knock against Joshua is what we just talked about. He's fought a lot of names, but he's either got them when they were too young or they were too old. And then Wilder, everyone has their critiques of Wilder. He can't box, the wild punches and this, that, and the other. So that's what I think makes it super intriguing to me, is like none of these guys are on pound for pound lists. It's just fun. It's heavyweights and their personalities. And, this is kind of a de facto semifinal. If you think about it, if all goes right, you would think the winner of this fight between Usyk and Joshua will fight the winner of Wilder and Fury, at least in theory, you would think that. So in terms of it being super intriguing, like in the ring tactically, there's so much at stake too.
And obviously like we touched on multiple times here, Usyk has his own technical ability. He should cause some problems for AJ, like he does for anybody else, whether he's at cruiserweight or the couple fights that he's had at heavyweight. I know not in an identical aspect, but I mean, if you had to compare one of AJ's past opponents to somebody who could be as close to Usyk as possible, who would you think?
Man, that's tough because Usyk is he throws 66 punches a round, which is a lot for like a welterweight, which is a lot for like a 140 pounder. And a lot of those were a cruiserweight, a lot of that data. But I went back and looked his two fights at heavyweight. He threw 55 punches a round, which is would be right at the top. You know, Joshua only throws 35, 37. You know, guys like Andy Ruiz only throw 35. 30. Heavyweights don't throw a lot of punches. Dillian White is like the exception. He throws a ton of punches. There isn't really anyone out there that you can that mimics Alexander Usyk. You know, on my show this week, I had Tris Dixon on, and he made a really good point. It's like, how do you find sparring? How do you find a heavyweight or a guy that's over 200 pounds, that's a lefty, that has like the footwork of Usyk? I mean, there's a reason why he's a kind of very unique fighter. And it's also a reason, you know, Joshua hasn't fought a southpaw in a very long time. I have Joshua's box rec right here. The Charles Martin fight was in 2016. So we're going on six, or what year is it now? we're going on 5 years without fighting a southpaw. A lot of that, you know, it's strategic. A lot of that is that there really aren't a lot of southpaws at heavyweight. But, man, finding a comparison to Usyk is tough. You guys have one?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like you said, there's only Lomachenko, and he's not a heavyweight. You know, he's down there at lightweight. So I don't think there's another heavyweight similar style. Maybe a Tyson Fury, but even then, they're kind of different, you know. But he's the only heavyweight that really kind of, like, you know, moves.
Yeah, Fury's a little more lateral, like up, like moving herky jerky, where Usyk is all feet. It's all footwork. It's all that, like you said, with Lomachenko's dad making his son be like a ballet dancer until he was 12. I mean, there's a reason why they have, it's like born into them. So yeah, I think Usyk is awesome. I love watching him fight. It's going to be really, really intriguing to see if he can bully or like what he can do, because this is a legit heavyweight fight. This isn't Chaz Witherspoon. This isn't, you know, an aging Chisora. This is Anthony Joshua. And I think he's in his prime right now.
Dan, how much do you take people talking about, you know, all the talk about is the size and the weight that obviously the Joshua has. But when you look at like Usyk, obviously he fought at super heavyweight against people like Joe Joyce in the, I always get the name wrong. It's the World Series of Boxing, right?
Mm-hmm. That was that weird Fugazi, like you're kind of like an amateur, but you could still be a pro. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I think that Joshua also dropped a lot of weight for this, you know, which I don't know exactly like why he did that. But he dropped a ton of weight. Just watching his workout today, like he is lean. Like he might be the lightest he's ever been. I don't know. Maybe he thought with the muscle, it's just too much. I mean, I thought he was way too muscular for the Ruiz fight. You know, he was just an Adonis for the first part of his career, but then he had to like, you know, make the adjustment. I guess he's going to be moving a lot. I think he's going to be moving around a lot on Saturday. And, That should be interesting too, because, you know, as I said, he's a mover now. Like he has completely transformed his style into a jab first guy. And that works. I mean, it works for Lennox Lewis, worked for Vladimir Klitschko. Is it exciting? No, but I don't really think Joshua cares anymore. Like if he can get a knockout, he'll go for it, as you saw with Pulev. But I think there's going to be a lot of movement from both guys.
What do you think about the chin test for Usyk? A lot of people have said, you know, he's not being tested at heavyweight, but yet he's fought, you know, Bradis and Gassiev, and both of those guys are looking at moving to heavyweight. And both of those guys are known to be, you know, big punchers. And also, like we touched on, the World Series of Boxing, he fought people like Joe Joyce and, you know, other people that now fight at heavyweight in the amateurs.
I guess we'll find out Saturday. I mean, it's really hard to gauge, like, chins, like... Unless you're Amir Khan and you've been knocked down so many damn times. But it's like, I feel like Joshua, like that one thing where Ruiz is going to chase him his whole career. And like, he'll get this label of being chinny. Like Joshua's got a pretty good beard too. I've seen him get rocked a bunch of times. But I think the fact that, you know, getting dropped by Ruiz and then how he fought in that rematch, which I thought was absurd. I mean, he moved so much. And I think he's trying to, what you see now, the Pulev fight, and then, you know, there's been almost 2 years removed from that is him mastering this new style that he has. But I don't know what chins. It's tough to say, but I think that Usyk will find out. Once that first flush shot lands on Usyk, it's going to be that welcome to the heavyweight division. And that's what's the most exciting thing about the heavyweights.
Dan, do you think we touched on the second Ruiz fight between with Anthony Joshua, how obviously mm-hmm. he fought a lot more cautious to try to cruise through the 12 rounds, especially when they engaged. He learned to back up and not really go through with it. Do you think that it might be an identical performance, not identical performance with Usyk this weekend, but I mean, if you had to bet on it, who has the more power at heavyweight? Is it Ruiz or Usyk?
Well, the thing with Ruiz is that he times his punches perfect. He's not a volume puncher. Like, people think Ruiz is a volume guy because he just throws punches and punches and then he stops. You know, he is at the bottom of the list in terms of punches thrown for heavyweights. So he has got decent power, but I just think he had Joshua's number that night. I just think that he found him. We just don't know about Usyk. That is also another intriguing part of this fight, is the great mystery. There's a lot of mystery around Usyk. He's on pound for pound lists. He had this unbelievable run at cruiserweight, but you know, how many guys have jumped from cruiser to heavy and had a ton of success outside of like Evander Holyfield? I mean, it's a very short list. Weight classes for a reason. That's a big jump. And it's especially a big jump today when the kings of heavyweight are monsters. They are either, you know, Wilder, not the bulkiest guy, but, you know, 6'5", 6'6", Fury, 6'7", you know, Joshua's 6'4", 6'5", maybe even 6'6", 250 he was. I mean, it's a big jump. And I think Usyk has power. I think he has just enough power, but it's tough to tell between him and Ruiz. I think they both rely on throwing a lot, like a death by a thousand cuts rather than one big punch.
In terms of the CompuBox statistics for Usyk's two fights at heavyweight with Witherspoon and Chisora, what's the one constant that stands out between those performances from him that he's likely to still utilize in this upcoming weekend against AJ?
Well, the Witherspoon fight was hard to distinguish anything. That was like a late replacement, and that guy didn't offer much resistance at all. With Chisora, I thought that it was his activity. He wore him down. He was moving all over the ring. You know, like I said, 55 punches around is a lot. 66 thrown over the course of his career. That's a lot. So that's one thing right there that I think could be an interesting wrinkle. But we've seen this with volume punchers, is that they don't always throw the same amount of punches when they have someone standing across from them that could knock them out. You know, same thing. Like, I go back to Miguel Burchelt when he fought Oscar Valdez. Burchelt was a madman. He was throwing like 80 punches around. He was just the ultimate pressure fighter. But against Valdez, it dipped. His punch output dipped because he was wary of a counter. He didn't want to get countered, and he did get countered all night long, and right until the last punch was thrown, and he got knocked out. So I don't think Usyk will throw 66 punches around. I think it will be somewhere even below 50, because he is going to, you know, when you throw punches, you leave yourself open, and Joshua is a good counter puncher too.
How does Usyk win this fight this weekend, Dan?
He's got to pay off the judges. No, I'm joking. It is in the UK. He's got to really, really win if he's going to get a decision. I really think he has to just win 9 rounds, and he's got to look great. And Joshua's got to be swinging at air all night. But for Usyk, I think he's going to have to move. I think he's going to have to sit down on punches too. You can't run the whole fight. That's not going to work for him. But for Usyk, he's going to do what he does. Like, I don't think he can reinvent the wheel now that he's at heavyweight and become like a knockout, you know, one punch guy. I think he's going to have to do a little bit of everything. Like you said, 36 minutes, like, show that you are a complete fighter, that you can fight 3 minutes of every round. Whereas the knock on Joshua, like Mike brought up, and I believe it is a knock too, is that he tends to take rounds off. He tends to take, moments of rounds off. There's a reason his punch, his totals are kind of low. Same thing with Canelo too. It was a knock on Canelo. It's that he went early on in his career, he used to take rounds off, and he used to just take his time in there. And he's also a low volume guy. So it's going to be interesting. I can't wait. I can't wait for this fight. It's going to be such a great chess match. I do think it's going to be a chess match.
Mike, what happens this weekend?
I think we're going to go Joshua by KO or Usyk on points. I think Usyk will befuddle him. I think Joshua is kind of more of a a man-made boxer. He was more just of a big athlete that they kind of made into a boxer, because obviously he started quite late. And I think some of the things that Usyk will do, I think it will kind of confuse Joshua, because there's not many boxers that you see go to the corner and they actually ask the corner, like, what should I do this round? Or what's he going to do? You know, that's kind of odd where Joshua does that, because I just think, you know, Tyson Fury has a very high boxing IQ and, you know, he can change and do different things and read what's going on in a fight. Whereas I think Joshua needs to be told, which I think is going to be, you know, his downfall. I think I honestly think Usyk might surprise us. I think he might take it on points.
Wow. Yeah.
That'd be huge.
It's like how Dan said, you know, it's definitely going to be a chess match, and it's a very intriguing fight. It's a very intriguing fight. You know, I give props to AJ for taking this fight. Obviously, Usyk is a mandatory, but this is a dangerous fight that could, you know, he took the Ruiz, the first Ruiz loss, and Eddie Hearn and Matchroom, everybody kind of went crazy because they thought, oh man, there goes the Wilder or the Fury matchups. And they got the Ruiz matchup and they did it in the Middle East and he got the belts back. This Usyk could throw a monkey wrench into all those plans again, but who knows?
Usyk Wilder unification bout. You heard it first.
You know what? Now that you touch on Wilder, at Wilder, obviously, the third match of the trilogy fight between him and Tyson Fury is October 9th, also in a couple weeks. You know what, from the statistical standpoint, as comparison to their first two fights, what are we looking for this third fight between Wilder and Fury, Dan?
Oh, man. Well, with Wilder, you know, he's a guy that can jab, and he doesn't get enough credit for it. And I tweeted out earlier this week that there's only two fighters in boxing today that land 30% or more of their jabs. It's Joshua and Golovkin. But for a while, it was Wilder. He was the third guy on that list because he doesn't throw a lot. He doesn't throw a lot of punches, but he does connect when he throws, whether it's his jab setting up that right hand. And that was completely taken away from him in that second fight. He wasn't able to do anything. I did not think that Fury was going to come in 275. I don't know what you guys thought of that, and I did not think he was going to step to Wilder. He had never done that in his career, or not in a very long time. But you know, you could almost have to like throw stats out the window when it comes to this trilogy. I mean, Fury's hard to hit. Wilder said he's not talking about going to the body. That's something he never does. Like, I went back and looked at his numbers. He never, ever goes to the body. It's just something that most heavyweights just don't do. So, yeah, when it comes to trilogy, these guys know each other. It's like going to be their 21st round of this trilogy. That fight's going to be great. It's almost only 2 weeks away. It's going to sneak up on us. I can't wait for that one, too.
And what do you think of the changes that Wilder's made in those Malik Scott videos?
I mean, I've never once made an assumption off of a Twitter video. I just don't think there's enough there. I think it's very, you know, manicured. I mean, I'm just happy to see Wilder. First thing I said when he resurfaced was, I'm just happy to see him training. I'm happy to see him spar. I think he's an interesting character in boxing. He was the guy for like 5 years until Fury came back, and then Joshua, you know, burst onto the scene. I like Deontay Wilder. I think he's exciting. I don't think he's going to win, but I think, you know, he's moving more. I think Malik Scott is saying and doing the right things, like, you know, telling him you need to move more, you need to box. But come on, the guy's like 35 and he's never boxed, you know, that tactfully in his career. I mean, he does throw a basic 1-2, but to have him in there moving all over the place, throwing body shots, I think that's too much. No, like, shouldn't he just go back to his bread and butter? I mean, the second fight was such an odd outlier, I thought, where who knows what happened in that one. I'm not getting into like conspiracies, but he was just outclassed. I think he should go back to that look at that first fight and try to do that again. You know, try to be at range and try to, you know, land that massive right hand before you go starting throwing body shots and doing stuff you're not really accustomed to doing.
Go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, do you think it's going to be a cash out, Dan? Do you think he just came back and knew that the third fight with Tyson would be the biggest payday, and then, you know, he'll just kind of ride off into the sunset, especially with all the, you know, all the complaints and stuff that he was making and all the reasons that he lost, and and also because he's kind of been found out. Like, I think a lot of people now, if he carries on after Tyson, will just try to walk him down knowing that he has like no back foot game.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very prideful guy, Wilder. There's a part of me that obviously he wants to pay day. I mean, he's contractually obligated to it, and he gave Fury a shot that first fight. I mean, no one even thought about Fury and Wilder fighting, and he gave him a shot, and then there was a rematch, and he's contractually obligated to have a third. I wanted to see Fury Joshua as much as the next guy, but as we know, like, contracts are contracts, but... it's interesting with Wilder. I think if he comes in, let's just say he goes in and he knocks out Fury, I think that it's hard to, he's back. Wilder will be very much back on the scene and he will be talking trash. And it's a very top heavy division. I mean, he's going to either fight like an Andy Ruiz if they want to keep it in PBC, or he's going to try to fight the winner of the Usyk versus Joshua. And if it's Joshua versus Wilder, I mean, right back in 2017, where we all started. Exactly. And then hopefully they make the fight. But would you be shocked if Wilder won and then they just were like, F you guys, Eddie and Usyk. We're going to fight Andy Ruiz. We're going to fight a PBC. We're going to fight a PBC guy. But hopefully it doesn't get to that. We got to go one step at a time. But I think Wilder with a big right hand can get right back into the picture.
Do you think, Dan, obviously you touched on that. We probably won't likely see Wilder have, some type of boxing technique. He's more of like a get in the range and then land that big right hand. And that's his bread and butter. So I agree with how you said that, that's pretty much what he has to do is just find that one single shot that he always does to win the fights. Do you think that after two fights against Fury, especially this last one, and obviously the type of fighter that Fury is, do you think we're going to see glimpses of Wilder with some type of boxing technique in that fight?
Well, he's going to try. I mean, it's clearly that's what they're working on in camp is they're trying, it's a little alarming, trying to like do things that you've never done at age 35. But if you go back and watch the second fight, like early on, like Wilder was able to land a couple big shots, Fury even admitted to it that like, man, you had me like rocked in the first or second round. Like all it takes is one shot from Wilder. All it takes is one shot from these heavyweights. I think, if we ran a simulation and they ran it 10 times, I think Fury wins like 9 of them, because he's just that much better and that much more of a natural boxer. But that first fight, and it's tough even basing the first fight off anything, because Fury was coming off of being almost 400 pounds, hadn't fought in so long, had a few tune-ups in there too. But I think that that's tough. It's another mystery. We just don't know what Wilder is going to come out and do. So if he sticks to his bread and butter, which was a simple 1-2, it carried him for almost 10 years in the heavyweight division. He can still land that right hand, but Fury's going to be fighting for his life or in fighting for that Joshua. But they want that fight so bad. That was like $100 million there just lying around. And it went to up in smoke.
If Wilder, one last question on this topic, if Wilder ends up winning against Fury and then says he wants Joshua, or if Joshua, obviously, if Joshua wins this weekend, assuming, does Wilder go to the UK or does Joshua come to the United States?
I don't know. I mean, like Matchroom USA is kind of like not a thing anymore. They're not many dates. Who knows? I mean, that's the worst part of this all is like, I think that boxing fans are so exhausted when it comes to the negotiations and, we're seeing it with like Ryan Garcia and Jojo Diaz. We're seeing it with Nonito Donaire who's he supposed to be fighting? It's slipping my
Caballo?
Mind. The Casemiro. No one wants to see this stuff anymore. We're so just either fight or don't. Because there are other fights to be made. So if it comes down to Joshua and Wilder, they should just do it where it gets the most money. If it means at Wembley, just do it. Just try to make the most you could possibly make. Wilder or I know Joshua's MO is he's a business guy. So I don't think Joshua will fight over in the US anytime soon. I think that whole MSG thing was, he's got some bad taste in his mouth from fighting here. He tried it once. It didn't work. He can always say he did it. He came here to the U.S. Maybe he wants to conquer that, and they can do that fight in Vegas. It's going to come down to the highest bidder or the freaking Middle East. you know, once COVID is under control and we can get back to somewhat normal, they're going to be throwing around big bucks, and yeah, it's going to come down to the most money. And Eddie knows how to find those site fees.
I think that it would be in the UK, and I agree, Dan, that I think his MSG, AJ's MSG fight is probably his one and done, especially because Sky Sports has him as an exclusive pay-per-view draw with them. Mm-hmm. And he's the only one out of the Matchroom stable that they kept. So I think that's why he's always going to fight in the UK, because Sky Sports is going to have a lot of leverage there. And like, hey, we're paying you all this money, Eddie Hearn, so you need to have him over here.
Yeah. This is his last fight.
What? Yeah, with Sky, right?
Yeah, this is his last fight on his Sky deal.
Oh, really? Yeah. I thought it was continuing, or it's not.
Well, that's the big question. What's going to happen? Is he going to go right to DAZN, because now DAZN has now separated themselves from Sky? I mean, that's and he signed this lifetime contract, and you know, Eddie's got a big one here. Everyone, he's got a big fish here with Joshua and potentially Canelo if he comes back to. And he is working with Matchroom. Eddie's somewhat involved with this plant fight to a very small degree, but you know, Eddie's got Joshua. He's got extreme leverage when it comes to his star power. But you know, there isn't any stadium fights in the States. Like, that's not a thing here. Like, it's, you put 10,000 to 20,000 in a basketball arena and you're happy. Like, what we're going to see this weekend, you know, 40,000-50,000 outside of a Canelo fight at Jerry World, it just doesn't really happen that often. So I would be shocked if Joshua steps foot. I would love it, but you know, from the fight in the States, but I just don't see it happening business wise.
I thought I read something about this new career long deal that he struck with Eddie Hearn, that the Sky Sports box office was included as well with him, or am I wrong? Maybe I didn't read that.
Might be fake news, Dan. You might have been duped. No, I think it's up for debate. I think it's the last one, and it's going to be a pretty big negotiation to see if he's going to fight on Sky or DAZN.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting, because if Sky Sports does lock him up again, then like I said, he's definitely going to fight in the UK going forward. Moving on that card, Lawrence Okoli, 16-0, goes up against Dylan, I hope I said that right. I'm talking about Chappelle's show here. Dylan. Prosovic, who is 15-0, also undefeated. This is for the WBO Cruiserweight World Championship. What's your take on this fight, Dan? And what's the stats behind Okoli's fights up until this one?
I love Okoli. I think he's one of the better stories in boxing. You know, working at McDonald's, right? You know, making rags to riches, and now he's fighting on the undercard of Anthony Joshua at this big stadium. But cruiserweight division, I don't know what exactly is the cruiserweight division, because after Usyk left and after the World Boxing Super Series, it kind of dissipated fast and everyone went to heavyweight. You know, I guess Jake Paul is considered a cruiserweight. Can we see Lawrence Okoli versus Jake Paul? I sure hope not. But this guy's got the goods. I just don't know about the dance partners. You know, what's going to happen at cruiser? Well, maybe, you know, he's got a title there. You can milk that for a while. And there's no one better than milking fights than Eddie Hearn. You know, this, I never heard of this, his opponent. But like, you guys know who else is out there at cruiser?
Mike.
Well, I think Bredis is he looked at moving up to heavyweight. I believe he's now going to stay at cruiserweight. I think Okoli's probably going to stick around, try to do undisputed, and then probably try to move up to heavyweight when all those guys get a little bit older. You know, because he's huge, even for a cruiserweight. You know, he kind of built like Wilder, you know, really, really tall, but kind of, you know, slim.
He's 6'5".
Yeah, so he's pretty tall. You know, up there with the giants, though, I guess, of like Tyson Fury and all those guys. But he's still to say, you know, he's a WBO cruiserweight champion, he's still a little bit raw, really. You know, he does pretty much all of his boxing just at long range. He doesn't really have much of an inside game yet, and kind of relies, similar to Wilder, just on kind of like the one-two constantly.
What do you guys think of the Bridgerweight? I know it was like a joke, and it was like the butt of a lot of jokes, but I was in San Diego working a DiBella card, and there was a guy named Elvis Rodriguez who is from the Southern California area, and he is a guy that like is too big to be a cruiserweight, and he's not big enough to be a heavyweight. And by today's standards of these massive guys, and he's fighting at Bridgerweight. And, you know, I was thinking in my head, it's like, yeah, I've made a lot of jokes about the Bridgerweight. And I think it's like another WBC creation. But, like, there might be something there for guys like, oh, I know Okoli probably won't do it, but it's really what he should be. And, you know, even like someone like Wilder, who's not like 210, 215, you know, but I don't think it will ever catch on, Bridgerweight. But like someone like Lawrence Okoli, if you take a look, there's no more cruiserweights, and he's not like ever going to fill out to like 220, 230, 240. He would be the ideal Bridgerweight if it wasn't such like a creation of Mauricio Sulaiman.
My take on the whole Bridgerweight situation, I think it's looked at as a joke right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just because it's so new. Mm-hmm. And I don't think boxing fans will start having some type of a respect for it until they get a crop of guys in that weight class who put on some entertaining fights and they see some competitiveness.
Yeah.
Because up until then, people are just going to look at it as a joke and complain that, like you said, Mauricio Sulaiman is just creating stuff.
Mauricio will say it's for fighter safety, and you know we don't want a smaller guy fighting a bigger guy. But come on, it's really about just getting that sanctioning fees and all that. But yeah, you remember this fight? It was on PBC. It was like a Sunday night over the summer. Apoche versus Glanton.
What city was that in?
It was in Minnesota, I want to say. It was like on the Morel card.
Yeah, I think we touched on that. Yeah, we
it was an absolute war. It was obviously. Yeah. I think it's my fight of the year, and. Those guys were like soaking wet 205. You know, that was a Bridgerweight fight. And that could have been like, if WBC was smart, they would have somehow got their claws into this and made that a Bridgerweight fight and said, like, this is what the Bridgerweights could be. You know, yeah. It could be exciting. It could be that. I can't believe that I'm even saying this. But like, after meeting with that guy in San Diego, and just he had no options really. I think it's more for that. I think Okoli is. It's got Eddie Hearn behind him, and he'll probably have a lot more options than this up and coming raw fighter that I met from San Diego, who you know doesn't have a lot of you know opportunities at heavyweight, and is too big to be a cruiserweight. He would be the perfect Bridgerweight, but it's interesting. So I want to see Okoli, see what he's got, and maybe, who knows? Maybe some guys at light heavy. Will jump up to cruiser. It's all about money, so it's just like following the money. If Okoli's the money guy, they'll jump up.
Dad, do you think that, you know, like you said, follow the money? Obviously, the money's at the heavyweight division. And cruiserweight, especially as it's been the last, you know, several years or so, if you're a cruiserweight fighter out there, your ultimate goal is always to move up to the heavyweight division, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a stepping stone. You know, no one ever really stays at cruiserweight. Like we said, it's like Holyfield. He, you know, wiped it out, and then he jumped up. You know, Usyk's looking to do the same thing. All the guys that fought in the World Boxing Super Series are doing the exact same thing. They're fighting there, making a name for themselves, and then they're hopping up to the money because it is what it is. Like I said, any other job, like you would hop up and try to make the most you can at your highest earning potential. So I don't know if Okoli. It'd be interesting to see what he's going to do. I would like to know what Eddie's plan for him is, because he kind of fell into his lap. Like Mike said, he's very green. You know, he's in a division that's got really no one in it. Beat Glonacki to win the title. I mean, that guy's best days are long behind him. So intriguing. It's a forgotten about division, but maybe he can restore some luster to it.
Yeah, probably. So hopefully he's definitely I'm intrigued to see if he ever gets that McDonald's sponsorship. I know they tweeted at him, or they tweeted about him following.
Yeah, they threw him a little bone. They just tweeted like one thing, and he's probably like, damn, like, come on, put me in a commercial.
Yeah. So I'm sure him and Eddie Hearn are trying to hold out for that. So we'll see how that goes. Also on that card, Callum Smith returns 27-1 as he goes up against Lennon Castillo, 21-3-1. Mm-hmm. Statistics wise, you know, obviously Callum Smith has that one individual loss against Canelo Alvarez, Dan. But, you know, where does Callum Smith lie right now? I think this is a light heavyweight fight. I think he moved up to 175.
Yeah.
Does he bring up his speed? I mean, normally, obviously, they don't as you get higher in weight. But From a statistical standpoint, what's Callum Smith right now?
That's another guy that's moving up, another guy in a moving to another division and trying to see what he can do there. Obviously got that assignment of a lifetime fighting Canelo in his last fight. And before that fight, I mean, the guy was like, you know, people were talking up Callum Smith as if he was Canelo's toughest test to date. And like, look at this, look what he did in the World Boxing Super Series, being able to win that one. A guy that depends on his jab being, you know, 6'3" and so tall and lanky and had some pop there too. You know, just no numbers that jump out at you. Nothing that jumps off the screen, just a sound boxer that when he's not in the ring with Canelo can do some things. And 175, you know, it's a division that, you know, has got some good Gilberto Ramirez. It's got Bivol. It's got Beterbiev. It's got Joe Smith, who now has COVID very bad. Story for another day. But, you know, I think Callum Smith has got a lot of good days ahead of him. He's only 31. This guy wasn't too far removed from that World Boxing Super Series run. What do you guys think?
Mike, what do you think?
Probably going to get killed for this, but I think he's massively overrated so far. WBC Diamond, WBA, and Ring Magazine. But who did he beat? He beat a one-armed George Groves that retired. He beat, lost to John Ryder. Canelo made easy work of him. Hassan Undan was actually a middleweight that got dragged up to super middleweight for that fight. So, you know, to me, I mean, he fought that Nicky Holtzkin in the World Boxing Super Series. He was a kickboxer.
He beat Rocky Fielding. Come on,
that's
man.
A good point. Yeah, solid.
Give him some damn credit here.
You're right.
He's, you know, he's, I wouldn't say he was like a creation, but like he comes from the Smith family. He's super, like he's tall. Like he was tall and he was, you know, very marketable too. Let's be honest. Marketable guy. And World Boxing Super Series was a great thing for him. Talking about guys, you know, using these things to their betterment or seeing an opportunity and taking it, like maybe someone to Bridgerweight. Callum Smith jumping in that 168 tournament and winning it and raising that big giant trophy. I mean, that did wonders for him. It got him a title and it got him a Canelo date, which is wild. But I don't disagree that he's a little overrated, but we'll see what he can do at 175.
Yeah. Like you just touched on, I think this World Boxing Super Series kind of brought the attention and, you know, what it did for people like Usyk, so the people that followed, like he got that huge kind of fan for all about him. But yeah, I think he's massively overrated. I think he's very one-dimensional. For somebody so tall and so lanky, he doesn't use it. He actually fights on the inside quite a lot.
I mean, look what he did with Canelo. I mean, it was pathetic.
Like, yeah. So
I didn't think he was going to win, but I thought he was going to put up a little bit of a better fight than that. He was just a coward and didn't. I mean, he's not a coward. He cowered to Canelo and didn't do a damn thing. He didn't pump a jab. He just kind of just shelled up.
It's a good thing you clarified that, Dan.
No one's a coward that gets into the ring. Absolutely no one is.
Of course not.
But on this fight, it could be tricky because Lennon Castillo, if you remember when he fought Bivol, Bivol had those two fights, Castillo, and then he fought somebody else. He didn't look too good because nobody really wants to fight Bivol. And Castillo, you know, he knows his way around a ring. He's experienced. It kind of nullifies a lot of things that you do. So unless, you know, Callum Smith manages to really catch him with one, this could be a boring night. You know, this is his first full camp with Buddy McGuirr. So it could be interesting to see if, you know, Buddy kind of tells him and kind of drills into him like, hey, like you're tall, you've got long levers, use it. Don't fight on the inside constantly, you know, because it's kind of like what he did with Kovalev. When he went to Kovalev, he's like, hey, where's all that amateur boxing gone? You know, you can box. You don't need to stand and bang all the time, because Kovalev kind of got, you know, fell in love with the fact he was heavy-handed. And then he kind of, you know, dialed him back and made him fight, you know, more of the boxer when he fought Alvarez. So it'd be interesting to see whether he does something similar with Callum Smith, you know, give that longevity and, you know, just really use, you know, the body that he has.
Right. Yeah. I'm looking forward to see how Callum Smith responds after taking his first professional loss, especially against somebody on a big stage like Canelo Alvarez. Because obviously we've seen when fighters take their first loss after fighting so many professional fights in their career, sometimes they can't bounce back after that first loss, and they're not the same fighter that they were before that loss. So let's see how that's what I'm intrigued to see. Let's see how he responds in this upcoming fight against Castillo. Rounding off that card, Florian Marcu another Matchroom up-and-coming fighter, goes up against Maxim Prodan for the IBF International Welterweight title. Dan, what do you think about Marku?
I'm going to be 100% honest with you. I've never heard of him.
Really?
No.
Well, he's only 8-0. And he's, I mean, Mike, give him a rundown of Florian Marku.
The reason I don't know him is because I don't, like, we're not working this card.
Right.
We're providing stats for the main event for Sky Bet. But usually when I'm on a show, I know everyone on there. But, you know, it's been a long couple of days.
I got you. Mike, give him a rundown on Florian Marku.
Please enlighten me.
He's the Albanian, you know, the Albanian king, as they call him, as a big. Mm-hmm. A big Albanian following, fights from, you know, Sam Jones with Esjan Boxing. He's one of his fighters. Kind of a little bit rough, kind of gets in there and really just kind of brawls more than boxes. He had a draw with, you know, Jamie Stewart two fights ago. Somebody, I think, who sells tickets. So I think they're going to, you know, try to protect him for a little while. This should be an interesting fight because, you know, both fighters kind of just get in there and go for it. So this is one of those fights that's, we always say, won't go the rounds, so it probably will go the rounds now that we've said it.
It can end up stealing the show, you're saying.
Right.
Possibly.
I mean, it's an undercard that's a little underwhelming. I mean, they got names on it, but they're not in there with other big names. You know, I mean, Campbell Hatton is on the card, right?
I believe yeah.
It's kind of funny you touched on that. I mean, the undercard for the Tyson Fury Wilder.
Oh, stacked.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's that. People are going to buy that because of that. I mean, it's heavyweights galore. I mean, there's two different ways, though. The heavyweight fights can be pretty boring or they can be bangers. But I think they're going to be bangers. Konaki and Hellenius, I mean, that fight was awesome. It was the last live fight. I was the last live fight in New York before COVID hit. And that was just a brawl. Frank Sanchez versus F.A. Jagba. I mean, that's going to deliver. I mean,
that's a crazy one.
Yeah. I mean, Jared Anderson is in a developmental stage still, but he is a guy to keep an eye on too. That's card, and they got Julian Williams fighting in a comeback fight. There's another one too that's early on in the day. It's like an all day fight. It's like 10 fights on the card.
Isn't Carlos Balderas on the fight too?
I believe that, and Elvis Rodriguez, who got cut by Top Rank, and he picked up. He's fighting in like one of the first fights of the night. So that's stacked. I know ESPN is going to be airing some of it. Fox is going to be airing some of it. That's going to be an all-day bonanza fight.
Yeah, definitely a good card there. Moving on to the news and notes section of this week's episode, starting with Canelo versus Plant, the press conference. Was today, Tuesday, actually, or this week, whenever you're listening to this show, in Beverly Hills, California, here in Los Angeles County. You know, initially it was pretty typical, you know, go up there, they do their speeches, you know, Tom Brown of TGB goes up, or, you know, Canelo's team goes up, you know, kind of promotes the fight, blah, 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 blah. But then we had some fireworks, some physical fireworks go. Canelo and Caleb Plant went face to face for the cameras, and they were obviously going back and forth talking their smack. And then Caleb Plant says something. Everybody's saying that it was something obviously about Canelo's mother or whatever it was, or maybe he misunderstood what was said. We're not sure. And then Canelo pushes him, and then Caleb Plant walks forward and tries to slap him. It looks like he connects a little bit with the tip of his fingers, and then Canelo kind of gets him with like a 1-2, and then kind of gives him a cut under, I believe, his right eye. I believe, you know, after, I don't know if you're watching that live, Dan, and if you were, what'd you think? But if you weren't, when you got the news that happened, what was your reaction?
You know, it's funny because, like you said, like a lot of these press conferences are pretty boring at this point, and especially with Canelo, like he doesn't talk trash. He doesn't, as of late, he's talking trash more if it was between Andrade. But I went out. I went to the park. I was having a nice day in New York City. I was like, all right, nothing's gonna happen. If anything happens, I'll just catch it on Twitter. Open up Twitter when I finally get to the park, and it's like an all-out fracas, some damn brawl, and not just your average brawl. Like this was legit. Like this is animosity. Like how many times have we watched contrived, you know, shoving match because the fight has zero buzz. It's no one cares. So they're going to just like shove each other and that's going to be the end of it. No, these guys legitimately do not like each other. There is a lot of animosity between the two, and it's all stemming from Plant's tweets a few weeks back about Valdez. Plant went on a tweeting spree just pretty much just throwing the entire team Canelo under the bus, saying that they're all cheaters. You know, Canelo's a cheat. Valdez is a cheat. The whole damn gym's a cheat. And those are some harsh words. You know, I think a lot of people will agree. Some people will say, well, that's a little too much coming from Caleb Plant. But that right there going in, like Canelo, that was in the back of Canelo's mind. And yes, things were lost in translation. He called him a mother effer. So Canelo took it literally. Don't you dare talk about my mom. I think no mother effer doesn't mean like the actual like literal term of it. So that got lost in translation. But fisticuffs. Like a legitimately interesting thing where 50 Cent is tweeting about, I'm going to watch this fight now. I think it's kind of stupid sometimes, but when it's real, there's nothing better. And the fact that he was able, it was just funny because people are now looking at this as saying, like, there's no way that Plant's going to beat Canelo because he just lost the first round. He slipped. Canelo slipped him, and he landed on him. That's Canelo's MO. You know, Plant is was going in telling everyone that he's faster, he's more powerful, he's quicker, he's this, that, and the other. But it didn't look like it there. But you know, obviously, it's not a real fight. But damn, I mean, that fight was already going to be intriguing. It was already my number one must-watch fight of the remaining year, but now it's just like times 10.
On the whole, you know, profanity-laced tirade there, that, you know, the mother effer, if Canelo did misconstrue that, you know, that's what's been reported, or I don't know if he said that or not, because I watched a couple interviews with Caleb Plant, especially the one that was done immediately after, where he did it with the Morning Combat guys, Brian Campbell and Luke. Mm-hmm. And they had asked him about that. And I thought, okay, well, if it was an easy explanation, if he says, well, I didn't talk about his mom, I said, MF-er. But he didn't, when they asked him, he didn't say that. And which kind of surprised me. I was like, oh, okay, well, was there some, that kind of made me think, okay, well, did you say something else when you were face to face that we couldn't
Canelo
hear?
Canelo didn't say it or Plant?
No, Caleb Plant. They were interviewing Caleb Plant.
Well, Plant, like I watched another thing too, where I couldn't see who asked the question. It was like a round table. And the guy said to Plant, did you say something about his mom? And Plant's like, do I have a mom? Because his mom passed away. And the reporter was like, no. Like, where's my mom? And the reporter was like, your mom's dead. And he's like, yeah. So why would I say something about his mom? I truly, like, I think Plant was really trying to get under the skin of Canelo, and I think he succeeded. Yeah. I know he got slapped, and he's bleeding, and he's now like a joke, and he's getting memed and whatever. It sells the fight. But when have you ever seen Canelo like this? Never. I honestly thought it was impossible to get under the skin of Canelo. It was impossible to get into his brain. Like Golovkin tried and Abel Sanchez tried with making those stupid commercials with the beef and all those. That wasn't enough. Like Caleb Plant is cut through all that and has gotten directly to Canelo to the point where, you know, he's calling him a drug cheat. He's going to keep saying it over and over and over. And I thought that when they asked Canelo about it in the presser, they didn't answer it. You know, Eddie Reynoso did not answer the question. They dipped and dived around it, and they didn't answer. Like, what do you think of him calling you a drug cheat? He did get suspended for 6 months. Remember, Canelo did that did happen to him. But you know, I think a lot of fans are willing to overlook it because they just love Canelo because he's the face of the sport.
And if you had to rank, you know, Canelo's last three opponents: Callum Smith, Billy Joe Saunders, and Caleb Plant, who's 1, 2, and 3?
I don't know. Another, it's like the common theme of this podcast where we're just like the mystery of it. And the reason why I think that a lot of people are kind of like, don't, I wouldn't say dislike, but are just kind of thrown off a little bit by Caleb Plant, because what has he done in his career? Like, who has he beat? He has beat literally no one. He won his belt with Buscategui. That was like 3 years ago. Since then he's fought Subway Mike. He's fought Caleb Truax, who I think is a great guy, but days are long, long behind it. He's had one of the most I don't know how to explain it, but he just had not had a very good run at 168. He does not, I wouldn't say off of merit, he deserves to fight Canelo. So I don't know where to put him. I mean, you almost have to put Saunders at the top. I mean, just off of just boxing skill and sharing the ring with a little bit better competition than Caleb Plant. But I do think the Caleb Plant is definitely the biggest, bigger guy. I think that he is the closest to his prime of any of Canelo's last couple opponents. And I do think he has a lot of the skills that can give Canelo problems, but he doesn't have the two things that you need to beat Canelo. That's volume and that's power. He doesn't have those. David Benavidez does, but I do not think that he has the power. I don't think he has the volume. I think he could do what Saunders did for the first five rounds, kind of, you know, outbox him a little bit. But as we see with Canelo, he just waits you out, and then he just goes to work.
Mike, what was your reaction to today's press conference between Canelo and Caleb Plant?
I thought Plant might try to do something, try to bring some attention to himself, because I think a lot of people have been downplaying him, you know, ever since, you know, he got kind of given the fight. Obviously, I didn't expect them to, you know, start slapping each other, but I thought, you know, he might talk some trash to him. But still, you know, I think it's going to, you know, maybe drive a few more eyes to the show. But, you know, I'd be very surprised if, you know, he gets under Canelo's skin and actually manages to, you know, affect Canelo's performance. If anything, he's just probably guaranteed himself a bigger beating.
Maybe.
Well, yeah, a motivated Canelo is a scary thing. And yeah, this is a Canelo that is now fighting on pay-per-view for the first time since the Golovkin fights. He's coming into his own, like, as a person. He's talking English more. And one of the reasons why he never spoken English, Dan, you probably understand this as a Mexican-American, is because there are things that get lost in translation. He didn't want to look foolish up there if he ever didn't know what to say. So he definitely, I truly believe that Plant wouldn't say anything about his mom. In fact, I'm reading it right now on Twitter. He just tweeted 7 minutes ago as we record this. My mother was shot and killed by police 2 years ago. Why would I ever bring anyone's mother up? And even if I didn't give a fuck, why would I open that door up for someone to just tell me, did your mom get shot, killed by the police? Dummy. No way y'all believe that shit. The truth is, he's mad. He's got someone in front of him who isn't scared of him and isn't just here to pick up a check, and his ego can't handle it. See, that's where, like, Plant always says, like, one, like, a couple good things, and then at the end, he always says one last thing, or just, like, I loved his self-belief. I think he's one of the most, like, you know, he really has dedicated his life to a Plant, but there are levels. There are levels to this.
Right. Yeah. It definitely got, it's gained a lot more attention. It's become more intriguing after today's press conference, which I'm sure Steven Espinoza and Showtime are very happy for.
Oh, man. Great week for Showtime. I mean, what a year for Showtime. They're getting all these big fights. They finally got Canelo. I thought it was going to go to Fox.
Yeah.
I just wish more people would watch. That's the one thing. Showtime's ratings, they're just not a lot of people have Showtime. You know, people have Fox.
Dan, do you think, you know, obviously this fight's on Showtime, and a lot of people thought Fox was going to get it. There's obviously some rumblings that PBC's deal is at the end of the line here with Fox. So maybe this kind of signifies what's going to happen in the future for them. Or do you think that Canelo, during the negotiations, said, hey, I want to fight with Showtime. I fought with them before. I like how they do business. And he kind of he moved the direction in that way.
I haven't heard that. No, I haven't heard that either.
That's just,
yeah, I know. I mean, yeah. he very Mel could have. Let's be honest. He's the guy, he's the everything in this. He can say, he has so much power in the sport right now that he can do that. But I don't think anyone has more power than Al Haymon. I mean, that guy is the most powerful guy in boxing. It's Al Haymon. This is how he operates. He gets one network against the other. He leverages one against the other, and then they go with one. I mean, that's pretty much the writing is on the wall. You could just see it. I mean, Fox came in strong, and then they were kind of not getting the best fights. The best fights were going to Showtime. You know, they had a little bit of a bigger budget. There's always reasons behind what Haymon does, but you know, listen, Showtime puts on a great product. They, outside of, like, I always thought it was HBO and then Showtime in terms of production. You know, they have, you know, I don't know if you guys like Morrow. I do. They got Al Bernstein calling a Canelo fight. That's classic. You know, they got a great team there. Custer's a professional. You know, it's going to look great. But the thing is, I just thought Fox had a bigger reach. Seeing Canelo on the Fox NFL Sunday or College Football Sunday, I understand they can do that with CBS, but it's just not the same. Like, Fox has the World Series, you know, game 7 is November 1st or 2nd. You know, that's like true. 3 days before the fight. I don't know. Another thing with Canelo is he doesn't exactly like to do anything anymore, like in terms of promoting fights. Like, that's, he had a great deal with the Zone where he did not have to do a lot of, like, these appearances, but he was also not fighting on pay-per-view with the Zone. So personally, I thought it was going to land on Fox. I was shocked. You know, I think that people at Fox were shocked. I think people behind the scenes were very stunned, you know, to learn that it was going to Showtime.
Right. Yeah. So we'll see, though. Hopefully this fight doesn't get postponed because of this cut under his eye.
Another tweet, I was just looking at it, that, you know, Luis de Cubas Jr. said that No stitches, no this, just a little tiny cut. He's sparring tomorrow. But another thing, though, going back to the Showtime thing, is that it shouldn't really matter, like, who's carrying the pay-per-view. Like, the fighters should carry it, you know? The fighters, like, Plant Canelo, who cares what it's on? Like, we're going to watch it. So I understand commercially, like, you want it to reach the most people, but there's also a huge UFC card that night, UFC.
Yeah.
So they better not do what they did to Canelo last time.
I know. That's what I'm afraid of. I was like, oh, this could happen again.
That was an embarrassing night for us boxing fans.
Yeah. The pictures of him and Kovalev just laying down on the couch like that, it's never gonna go away.
No, I'm telling you, Canelo, that's something that still bugs him to this day. He's, you know, he did not like that at all.
Yeah, definitely not. Ryan Garcia and Joseph Diaz Jr. It's not official yet, but there's, you know, more increasing talks as each day goes by, and it looks like this fight might happen, especially since they're both under the Golden Boy banner. What do you think about this potential matchup, Dan? And, you know, who wins?
I'll tell you what, I hope they fight, because I can't take any more of their tweeting. Like, I used to love that stuff. Like, you guys, I used to love when fighters used to get on Twitter and start talking trash, but it's the most played out thing in the world. Especially Ryan Garcia, I'm a big supporter of his. You know, mental health is something I take very seriously. I came to his defense when he decided to step away. But, you know, it just is what it is at this point. When you go on Twitter and you start talking about, I got a fight announcement, I think soon. And then now these two guys have been going at it for like 3-4 days now. I like the fight. And I've been thinking about it more and more. And like, yes, Devin Haney deserves to fight both these guys, because he is the actual champion at 135, if you actually broke it down and looked at it. But let's be honest, who puts asses in seats? It's Ryan Garcia. Who, like, people want to watch Ryan Garcia. So if you are Jojo Diaz and you're looking at, I can potentially fight Ryan Garcia or I could fight Devin Haney. One of them has the legitimate title at 135, which can lead me to more dollars, or I could just make so much more to fight Ryan Garcia at Staples Center with 20,000 screaming girls, and I could potentially knock him out. And then I'm the guy that knocked out Ryan Garcia. Then Devin Haney's waiting for him. So I understand it's a business thing. And I think that Haney needs to realize that, is that he's not a big draw. He's a great boxer, but he's not a big draw.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. Mike, what do you think about that whole Ryan Garcia, Jojo Diaz, Devin Haney triangle that's happening right now?
It's a love triangle,
Mike. Yeah.
That whole division needs to stop talking and just fight each other. You know, I think they need to realize, you know, all of them, Teofimo Lopez, Devin Haney, Javonte Davis, Shakur Stevenson, like all of those guys, they need each other. Stop talking shit, just fight each other. You know, at the end of the day, how many great boxers have losses on their records? There's no need to, you know, protect it. Just do a round robin of all of those guys. That could keep us entertained for how many years if they all just fight each other? They're all going to get paid. And some of them probably, you know, need someone like Ryan Garcia to put bums in seats. I don't know how many, you know, people like Devin Haney draws. I'm sure he thinks he's a bigger draw than he is. So he needs someone like, you know, like a Tank or a Ryan Garcia, in my opinion, to put bums on seats. But, you know, stop talking and, you know, just start fighting each other. You know, Teofimo Lopez as well. Like, how long's, you know, been the undisputed champion, and how many times has that fight been moved with Kambosos?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this too with Teofimo, and it's like this is out of his control. Like, he got a bag. He got handed a lottery ticket. He got handed, you know, whatever he walks away from this fight, what, 3 million, let's just say, or 2.5 to 3. He was not making that at this stage in his career. He has to wait. Like, he is fed up. I know for a fact. I speak with the guy pretty regularly. Like, he's fed up with Triller. But let's be honest, like, he's just doing this because he's getting $3 million. Like, all these guys wish they can get that type of money. So it's out of his control. I do think that fight will happen on the 4th. They're not going to be able to move it. It's like two weeks away. But going back to Ryan Garcia, I think Ryan Garcia, Jojo Diaz is going to be an awesome fight. I think that Garcia's speed, I think he just has a little more tools. I think Jojo Diaz is a little more rugged. I think he's going to take him to deep waters and it'll give him like a tough fight. I think he can kind of like bully him around. But I just think that Ryan Garcia's speed is just too much. I really do think that he's got speed and power. But just do the damn fight, you know? Just you're right. We have to see this. Like, look at what's his name? My man, Porter, Sean Porter. I mean, he fought everybody, and he's going to be remembered as like an all-time, I don't say great, but he's going to be regarded very, he's going to be one of the most respected guys, and he's going to go into broadcasting, and he's going to have a ton of respect for the rest of his broadcasting career because he legitimately fought everyone. Yes, he lost a lot of these big fights, but he also was in them. Not only is he going to be wealthy, he's going to have the respect, and it just does wonders for your career. Like you said, Mike, I truly believe, like, if these guys all fought, like, that's like 4 years, 5 years of fights. Like, the Four Kings, that lasted 11 years. They fought for 11 years.
Yeah, and all these guys are, like, in their 20s, like, their mid-20s and early 20s, so it could last even longer than that. Who knows?
Yeah, I think Tank should, if Tank was smart, he would fight Ryan Garcia right now. Because who knows how long Ryan Garcia is for the sport? Who knows if he wants to get out and become an actor or do whatever the hell he wants to do? And it's a winnable fight for Tank. So you can make a lot and you can win the fight. Get him now before he gets any better or even worse, he retires or he's gone. So I don't know. I don't get it.
I don't think it's not that Tank and you know Mayweather don't want to fight Garcia. I think it's just Oscar De La Hoya and Golden Boy who are not letting it happen because there was an interview I've seen where I don't know if it was when it was a Canelo press conference or something, but De La Hoya had did an interview and they asked him, hey, you know, how about putting Tank in with Grant Garcia? And he said, and I remember I got to find it, but
it was a couple years ago.
Yeah. He was like, oh, Tank's a beast. He's like, no. Like he admitted like, yeah, that he's going to kill my guy. And I still believe even as of now that De La Hoya still believes that and he's not ready.
Yeah, but De La Hoya also is a businessman, and he knows, like he's invested in Ryan Garcia. Eventually, he needs to see a dividend. He needs to see a return on that investment. And, you know, fighting a Jojo Diaz will make some money, but it's not going to make the same amount he can fight a Tank. So De La Hoya knows Ryan Garcia better than any of us. He knows what he's got in his guy. So, you know, maybe he thinks, like, all right, I don't think he's going to be around for much longer. The guy just took a break. In the, you know, whether he needed it or not, he took a break after the biggest win of his career. He kind of stalled all his momentum and, you know, mental health is nothing to sneeze at. But, you know, after a while, I think De La Hoya is going to be like, all right, I need to put this guy in a big fight because he might not be an active fighter for much longer. So let me look around. A Tank Davis versus Ryan Garcia fight, that's box office. I mean, that's a huge fight. That's a massive fight. I could make guys, each of them, at least $10 million.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely a money fight there. Last topic of the news and notes section as we round the finish line here on this week's episode of The Last Round. Former executive at Golden Boy, Richard Schaefer, who also still runs barely Ring Star Promotions. I don't even know if it's still going in a sense, has officially announced the launch of a new promotion and media company called ProBellum. I believe that's how you pronounce it. It's a new boxing promotion and media company. For which Schaefer will serve as the company's president. ProBellum will attempt to leverage its relationships in several areas, including Europe, Asia, Africa, and the Middle East, among others, to take more of a global approach to the heavily splintered and fragmented sport. You know, I think we talked about this just before we started recording, Dan. You know, I think a lot of people had forgotten about Richard Schaefer. And this just kind of came out of nowhere. What was your reaction to this? And did you hear any rumblings about this before?
No, I hadn't. I hadn't heard much. I think Schaefer is a pretty smart guy. He did wonderful things with Golden Boy when Oscar was going through some personal things. And you know, they had their whole falling out. And he had to pretty much just leave boxing. It was under like a you know court-ordered thing where he could not be involved in the sport for like 2 years or something. Then he came back with Ring Star. And it's just tough. It's really hard. If you're not like a Top Rank or a Golden Boy or a PBC or a Matchroom, it's like really hard. Look at Triller. Like it's looks fun, like from the outside. I think Schaefer knows a little more than Ryan Kavanaugh and the guys at Triller, but I like their approach to like globally. Like there are markets that don't even have boxing, you know, like I think he wants to do a lot of stuff with African boxers and African fighters and tap into that market. You know, it could work well if it's a global thing. Like it's hard to do something here in the States. I think it's just, I think any Hearn learned that. It's just not like there's it's too the Giants are here and they're entrenched. But if Schaefer wants to start it small, and he's not really talking about starting 100 shows in a year is pretty advantageous plan there. But if you can tap into markets that don't have boxing and they can find some diamonds in the rough and they can put on, you know, low budget shows, you know, why not? Let's see what he can do. You know, he's not coming in here to take over U.S. boxing. I think he's going to start with around the globe and then try to work his way up, which I think is a pretty good business model.
And what's your take on Eddie Hearn and what, you know, he's done so far in his, you know, worldwide attempt at dominance? Because I know I know that he seems to get a lot of stick, especially back in the U.K.
Mixed bag. I think that he did. You know, he made a lot of money for a lot of fighters. I think that he kind of had to do that in order to try to, you know, disrupt things like he did early on, is just throw a ton of money at guys. You know, Demetrius Andrade, insanely overpaid. You know, Mikey Garcia, insanely overpaid, and it messed up the market for a while, and it was a big market correction. But he had the dollars behind him, and he was told to go do something. He had marching orders from, you know, DAZN and the oligarch there that was running DAZN. But he puts on good fights. You know, he does. He puts on big events. I mean, there's a reason why Canelo likes the guy. I mean, that means something to me. He enjoys working with him on a global, you know, stage. Hearn is good. Here in the States, like I was just illustrating, it's really hard. It's hard to break through. It's hard to make fights. It's hard to lure people away if they just don't want to do it. Like, he tried to get the Charlos to come over to his own. He tried to lure fighters away with the bag, but they just, you know, they just wouldn't leave. You know, very loyal to Heyman. But I think it's a mixed bag. I think that Hearn isn't as great as he thinks he is, and I think that he isn't as bad as some people make him out to be. I think he's a much-needed character in the sport. I think that the Fury-Joshua talks, I think, really hurt him in terms of his believability. And I think it did a little bit of damage to him, because every week he was saying the fight's coming next. And whether it was out of his control, I don't think, you know, he couldn't do much with the arbitrator, but that was a big hit. That was a big hit for him, in terms of him being like a talking head out there and just doing interviews left and right. Cause it's kind of like, well, yeah, you didn't really exactly deliver that fight and you kind of promised it. So why should we believe you?
Right. Yeah. I think it's touching on the whole Eddie Hearn, how people perceive him, especially in the UK. I remember when he started doing his Matchroom USA fights over here. I don't know if it was the first one or one of the initial ones at the Forum here in Los Angeles. It might've been when he announced that Danny Jacobs had signed a deal with him or somewhere around that timeline. I remember him talking to us in the media and saying, he's like, oh yeah. He's like, I walked in and the crowd cheered me. He's like, this doesn't happen over there. He was like, but just give it some time. He's like, it'll eventually.
Yes, exactly. He knows, like I've done interviews with him. He knows that, like, he's like a lightning rod. He knows that people hate him. He actually like enjoys it. Like, he likes when people dislike him, and he's fun. And he plays with it. He's a much needed character in the sport. I truly believe that you know, he's in it to make the biggest fights, which ultimately makes him the most money. You know, now you have this lifetime deal. Like, I've never seen that before. Yeah. I've never seen a fighter sign a lifetime deal like Anthony Joshua just did. But who knows? Maybe Joshua got an equity in Matchroom. I wouldn't be surprised. You know, Joshua has great managers. You know, he's got a great management team, and, you know, but that's just interesting. A lot of these, you know, the two biggest stars in boxing, arguably, Joshua, Canelo, right. And they're with Eddie Hearn. So,
yeah,
something.
Yeah, he's doing something right. You know, as much as people hate him, especially over there in Mike's motherland in the UK. You know,
you like him, Mike? What do you think of him?
Yeah, I don't mind him. I always just look at it when, you know, he's like a pantomime villain, you know, like when they always boo him and stuff like that. And I'm thinking, but he gives us the fights. Like, if he's not doing it, then who's going to do it?
Yeah.
It's that sort of thing. And like you touched on, is, I know, like Bob Arum said, you know, he doesn't know the United States, but then, like you just touched on, AJ, Canelo, Golovkin, you know, they're all under, you know, his banner. So, you know, he's doing something right. And if he's not giving us those fights, then does Frank Warren give us, you know, those big, big fights? Does De La Hoya give us, you know, consistent cards with big fights? So does Top Rank? Like, I don't think any of them do, but I think because Eddie's out there constantly doing the media, he's more in the limelight, which then leaves him open for, yep, you know, people to give him, you know, that to give him shit, essentially.
Yeah, that's like why look at PBC. They don't talk.
Yeah, exactly. I was just about to say, whereas Al Heyman, no one knows if he's even real.
I met him once.
You're right.
I met him. I had Ariel Helwani in my show last week. I met him at Mayweather Cotto. He is in fact a real person.
Oh, so you actually met him? Because I saw him at Staples Center where he had the door crack. It was actually, I vividly remember like it was yesterday. It was during the Mayweather McGregor press conference at the Staples Center. Mm-hmm. Obviously the media, we went through like the locker rooms and stuff like that. And I was walking by and everybody was already ahead of me. Cause I remember I was in the back doing some interviews. So everybody was already like in the arena and stuff. And I was walking by and I remember Kelly Swanson was at this door. It looked like a locker room door. The door was cracked and he was standing right there. And
he watches all the fights in the back. He right. never will be ring. He watches, at the Barclays Center, if there's a fight card on, he watches it from the TV in the back. He right. doesn't do interviews, but you know, I have friends in the business that talk to him all the time, you know, lawyers and stuff. And he's very respected and he's a very, right. very smart guy. He just, to your point, Mike, just chooses not to do interviews. And, you know, they just announce fights. Pacquiao Spence came out of absolutely nowhere. Meanwhile, that fight comes out of nowhere, but then Fury Joshua, painstaking details, like, next week, we're going to have a meeting to talk about what's going to come next. And it was the most painstaking thing. And I truly believe that hurt Eddie's reputation a lot. And it's the price of doing business. Put yourself out there and you're going to take it. And he'll tell you himself. He'll tell you himself that, you know, he understands why he has haters, understands why he has people that like him. But it's all necessary. Like we don't have one UFC. So we need to like them all. We need to accept them all. Like Top Rank gives us some good fights. PBC gives us some good fights. Matchroom gives us some good fights. You know, what are the other? Golden Boy gives us some good fights. So you kind of have to take it as a whole, you know, and just kind of laugh with it and the characters involved.
Yeah.
Dan, do you think we'd ever get to the point where like Matchroom buy a Top Rank or they buy like, you know, one of the smaller ones and we get close to that UFC model?
I don't know. I think it's going to take so long. There's so many like, you know, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube type of thing. It's just so many like companies out there. The only one I think that could possibly is Golden Boy. You know, they're a smaller, probably the smallest roster of any of the big boys. Maybe Top mm-hmm. Rank. I predicted this in the beginning of the year, like Top Rank and Golden Boy. If they don't just ultimately just get bought out and but they somehow merge or they come together. Because you need more. They need more fighters. Like Top Rank is running out of fighters and they're stable for each guy to fight. Like where a Terrence Crawford can fight a Virgil Ortiz under a Top Rank and a Golden Boy alliance or whatever you want to call it. But as for like one per, I just had this conversation with Ariel Helwani in my last show. It's like, you know, we're talking about the boxing culture versus the MMA culture. It's like, do you really want one guy making decisions for the whole sport? Like, do you want a Dana White? Because Ariel was explaining how boring the UFC is, where they have so many rules where you can't get sponsorships and everything's kind of like vanilla and uniform. And you have one guy making decisions where boxing, it's kind of like free market. It's frustrating as hell as a fan because you don't get those big fights. But when you get them, you know, it feels big. Where the UFC, it just feels like another league.
I think one last point. I think the Golden Boy and Top Rank merging isn't as out of the question as people think. Because remember, I think it was last year, within the last year or so, Bob Arum was actually meeting with Eric Gomez and Oscar De La Hoya at De La Hoya's house in L.A.
There was a picture.
Yeah, there was a picture that was released. And
yeah, they don't do that on accident. They do that on purpose. But they need each other. Like, but it just comes down to it. It's just an ego thing. It's like De La Hoya, I think, is willing to work with others more than any other promoter. Right. Look at some of those fights. He does a lot of joint promotion fights. He does a lot. He'll let his fighters fight if they're going to make a money for Golden Boy. And they put on some of the best shows, Golden Boy. They know what they're doing. They have the best matchmaker. I know you guys do a lot of shows with him. And they have just a well-run business. And mm-hmm. I know Oscar's got his demons and his problems, but the guys that he hired that are running that business, Eric Gomez, does a great job. I think Golden Boy, you know, if they got more money and like, if DAZN gave Golden Boy all their money rather than Matchroom, I think it would be a lot different right now.
They got some good prospects as well. Virgil Ortiz, Josh Franco, Bam Bam Rodriguez.
I wouldn't even call Ortiz a prospect anymore. I think he's a contender.
Mm.
But
yeah, like contender, like he's not a titleist yet, but he's damn knocking on the door. I mean,
right, yeah,
but yeah, Golden Boy's got Ryan Garcia, whatever you make of him, and
JoJo, yeah,
and they make good fights. I mean, some of these DAZN run that they've had over the last 3 years, their best cards I thought were those Golden Boy ones that where they got right. from the Canelo deal.
Yeah, definitely entertaining. Well, Dan, we definitely appreciate your valuable time here on the last round. Again, we know you're on the East Coast, so we it's a little bit close to midnight for you, so we appreciate it.
Ain't nothing
it.
For me, man. I'm all revved up from that Canelo slapper around the world.
Oh, I know. I think that energized everybody for that fight. You know, it's definitely good for the promotion. And like I said, Steven Espinoza and Showtime. But, you know, before we let you go, obviously, go ahead and let people know, you know, when your show drops. Obviously, you drop a show, I think, every once a week. And then mm-hmm. you got your CompuBox career as well. And then, you know, go ahead and plug everything you got, man.
Yeah, man. Show coming up this week. I got Tris Dixon, you know, a UK voice to give us some insight on Joshua Usyk, big fight. Next week, I'll be on the Fury Wilder preview, the PBC countdown show. It's going to be on ESPN. It's also going to be on Fox. They're going to get that into full overdrive. That's a fun show where they go through every guy's biggest mm-hmm. fight. And yeah, just follow me on Twitter. You know, I like to make jokes. I like to post stats. I like to make you know, light of this ridiculous sport, but I appreciate it, guys. You know, grinding week in, week out, just like you guys do. It's a tough gig in terms of covering this sport, but I truly believe that we're in store for a really good 3 months where we can every week talk about a big fight rather than, you know, all the nonsense we've been talking about for the last couple weeks.
absolutely. And go ahead, Mike, the usual, let our fans and listeners know where they can find us and follow us.
We're at the Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter, and be sure to join us next week to preview the Chris Eubank Jr. and I think Teofimo Lopez against George Kambosos, unless it moves from the 4th to the 16th or wherever it lands.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see as the days go by. So for our special guest of the week in CompuBox and Inside Boxing Live, Dan Canobio, for my co-host Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is the Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round 12.